Well, the final element of the agrarian vision is, of course, his civic humanism. And by civic humanism, we mean a worldview in which the most fulfilling and rewarding parts of life are considered those moments when one participates in the political activities of the community. That it's in living as a political entity that man achieves his highest goal as a zoon politico, as a political animal. In this regard, perhaps the most interesting claim he makes is that when we think of the failure of civic humanism, the cause of it is that our principles of association are simply too large for us to feel the bond of brotherhood necessary for that sort of political community. Right? Sociologists call this the transformation from a Gemeinschaft to a Gesellschaft, from a face-to-face community to an impersonal community. His answer to that is always to break larger units down into smaller ones, make them the locus of political society, thus allowing for the reemergence of civic humanism. As he writes, it will be said that the great societies cannot exist without government. The savages, therefore, break them into small ones. Well, Jefferson's agrarian ideal is in fact exemplified in a plan he drew up for the Northwest Territories, his famous Northwest Ordinance of 1784, which he submitted to Congress. The provisions of it are pretty straightforward. The settlers will establish a temporary government to adopt the constitution and laws of any one of these states, so that such laws nevertheless shall be subject to alteration by their ordinary legislature. So right away, Jefferson wants self-government on the ground. Such temporary government shall only continue in force in any state until it shall have acquired 20,000 freed inhabitants, not 20,000 voters. 20,000 freed inhabitants, which is a fairly small number. Then when giving due proof thereof to Congress, they shall receive from them authority with appointments of time and place to call a convention of representatives to establish a permanent constitution and government for themselves. Now, he has five interesting provisos in this scheme. First, they have to remain within the United States. Secondly, that in their persons, property, and territory, they shall be subject to the government of the United States and Congress. Third, they have to shoulder their part of the federal debt. But when we get to the last two provisos, these are the critical ones, the revealing ones. Four, that their respective government shall be in republican forms and shall admit no person to be a citizen who holds any hereditary title. So right away, Jefferson wants to preclude the possibility of the development of European aristocracy. Fifth, that after the year 1800 of the Christian era, there shall be neither slavery nor involuntary servitude in any of the said states. So again, we're back to Jefferson grappling with the problem of abolition, trying to limit it, at least, to the places where it presently exists. Once those states reach a population equal to even the smallest of the original states, they will hold a constitutional convention and be admitted into the government. Now, this plan is pretty much adopted by Congress in 1785. The anti-slavery proviso is dropped, but the region is to be self-governed. It's divided into small local districts, 36 square mile townships, divided into a variety of lots. One lot is reserved for public schools. Several lots are reserved for the use of the federal government and war veterans. And it's to be sold at auction in lots of at least 640 acres at about $1 an acre. And while this is hardly the sort of acreage and price which would attract the down and out, it's also not the terms which will attract large speculators. Jefferson, again, is envisioning people like his father taking advantage of this. Lesser gentlemen, larger yeomen, moving their way up in the world. Okay. Well, what I want to argue about Jefferson's agrarianism is that there's a fundamental tension in it between the incredible idealism of his vision and the actual realities of America, realities that Jefferson himself is aware of. And it's these tensions which will, in large part, propel Jefferson's political development. Take, for example, the Northwest Ordinance he passed. It turns out to be an utter failure. No one wanted to move west under those circumstances. In fact, the only people that did were largely people called squatters, frontier folk who move in, don't pay any taxes, don't claim the land, just move in there, don't try to farm for commercial reasons, and basically just support themselves. They're an unruly, violent place. I think the best image you could have is the Wild West. That's sort of what his plan creates. And there's a simple reason for this. This was not that long ago. Farmers then as well as now, people then as well as now, don't move into unopened spaces. They move into areas that are improved.